Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We're part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, it is time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up, but first we must start on a more somber note. Some news that came through the pipeline recently that I was not at all prepared for. The Orlando Magic has been a relatively active offseason for them so far. Heavy draft, signed Joe Ingles. Cool. They have waived Bobo after an electrifying first 30 or so games of the season for him. He then stopped making threes and fell out of the rotation, and it's happened to coincide with Orlando winning games in the second half of the year and making a late play-in push, didn't ultimately get there. But no Bobo in Orlando. He is an undrafted free agent, so any team can sign him. So if anyone is looking for a very tall man that can shoot and handle and have some fun in transition, blocks of shots. He was up there in block percentage for most of the year. If you are searching, Bobo is now available. Steve, your thoughts?
I'm stunned. We had a pod with Zach Lowe. You brought Bobo and the Magic up. Doris Burke brought Bobo and the Magic up. Started the pod with this Bobo news. Said Bobo was the most improved player on December 14th, 2022.
Not the date.
Best of luck to this man. But you went from that to all of the adrenaline leaving your soul.
Are you proud of that?
No.
You shouldn't be. That's awful. Adrenaline left your soul. Okay. I see what time it is. Speaking of time, we can now transition. We have a little bit of a Damian Lillard update. There has been no trade yet. We did get an article from Adrian Wojnarowski kind of detailing where talks are right now. It's like, hey, man, this is inarguably the biggest move of Joe Cronin's career so far in Portland. He has to trade, or I guess he doesn't technically have to trade Damian Lillard. He has multiple years left on his contract. But for all intents and purposes, Damian Lillard has requested a trade. He has requested a trade to Miami via multiple reports. And whether he ends up in Miami or if another team steps up with an offer, it is imperative that Joe Cronin get some good stuff for Portland. And so going through that piece and the note about Dame's agent communicating with other teams like, hey, you might not want to trade for Dame. He won't be happy here. You don't really want to do that. And in light of teams reaching out but not offering things, I think Utah was a team that was mentioned as a team that kind of had a call, but there hasn't been an official Dame offer yet. I do wonder just how entrenched Portland will be, and like rightfully so. If you are trading arguably the greatest player in your franchise history coming off of the offensive season that he just had, like, no, you don't want to trade him for a bag of Lay's potato chips and a pack of spearmint. So I get it. But I do wonder, with all the messaging going out, all the waves being sent from Dame's side, like Miami is where he wants to be. It was a two-team list initially when the trade request came out. It was Miami and Brooklyn. But again, it very much sounds like Miami is the choice for him. How much do other teams care about that? Because, one, the contract length is just different. And I think that's the easiest counterpoint to any comparison between like Dame and Kawhi Leonard. The contract length is such where you can reasonably make the gamble, like, he's locked in. And if we're a good enough team, we can convince him, hey, it may not be Miami, but you can still make us a title contender. And I wonder if Boston take the plunge or insert really good team here that can offer more than, and again, in these talks, and where I'm so fascinated is it still doesn't have to be an elite offer. Like, the bar right now seems to be, we need a better offer than what Miami is giving us. And if that's the bar, that does open up the door, at least theoretically, for, again, if Boston wants to get into it, they can. Like we talked a little bit about New Orleans on the last pod. Like if they want to, they can. Because if nothing else, they can beat a Miami offer, right? I just wonder how much teams are going to care about that, or like the prospect of Dame being disgruntled or potentially asking out again in the year. And like what that does for the Dame rep, however much he cares about that. I don't know. Like it's fascinating to me.
Fascinating. We've come a long way in about a week. I'm proud of you. I like it. I think to bounce off your point, Dame's agent is doing what Dame's agent is supposed to do in that scenario. Mm-hmm. I think for Dame to get to the point of wanting this trade or asking to be traded, I don't necessarily think he did this with like a hop and a skip, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes sense. Like, hey, if I'm going to do this, I want to go here. If I'm not going to be here, send me to Miami. As far as the Blazers go, see, for me, all these updates on their end, I feel like it's either a message to Miami or like, hey, a message to mystery third team. You want in on this, right? Like that's, I'm waiting to see who is the third team that's going to complete this puzzle, in my head at least.
Yeah.
Or it's, hey, Damian Lillard is available. You guys know Damian Lillard's available, right? So you have the bonus of, you know, I think Portland knows Miami's offer, like the back of their hand. Here we get a third team involved to make this even more fruitful. Or could someone else pop up and say, you know what? We need to make this decision. we need to shoot our shot. Yeah.
Can I jump in very quickly? Don't mean to cut you off. I think I agree with you that Portland knows Miami's offer. Do we know or do we think Miami has offered everything yet? And like, I wonder how much of that is impacting this strong messaging coming from Portland. Because I think just in a vacuum, like, duh, you want to get the best thing that you can. But like, if you're Miami and you could offer up, like, is Tyler Hero to some third team, Kyle Lowry's expiring, Jovic, Yaka is in 30 days since he signed a rookie contract, or I guess like 28 days at this point. But yeah, Triple J at the end of the month when he's eligible to be traded again. And the two picks, maybe three picks, if they work out something with OKC to unprotect the pick, et cetera, swaps, whatever. If you're Miami and you know Dame only wants Miami, like, do I need to offer all of that yet? And I wonder how much of this accelerates if Miami says, okay, fine, we want Dame. This is as far as we can go because this is what we have. But this is what we have. Does that accelerate it all for Portland? Or are they just like, no, we know what you have. Thank you for finally offering everything that you have. This is not good enough for Damian Lillard. Figure something else out with a third team or somebody else needs to come call them. Like, what is that balance like? I think that's something I'm also just interested in.
I mean, to your earlier point, how you started, I think it's just understanding the gravity of the trade. And hey, we need to get as much as we can out of this. The market may be this. We don't want to take on salary. Other teams may not want to take on salary. Other teams may not think that this is the time to send all that for Dame. So it's just trying to gauge how can we get the most out of it to me. It's just kind of wild to see the other side as well, where Dame is, it sounds like he, hey, can we just do anything? Can we just do anything but run it back?
Yeah.
Like, I'm cool with the future. Can we just get anyone? And the Blazers are like, I mean, we kind of like our future. Well, I guess we got to go. That's how that ended. Two things, though.
Okay.
One, very interesting, this comes out on the eve of Summer League opening weekend in Vegas, where everyone will be there for at least the next 72 hours, depending on your vibes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If I see any sort of blurry pictures or fake reports of someone in a Blazer polo talking to someone in a Heat polo, don't talk to me. Also, if I see two people who are just there in town in a Blazers polo and a Heat polo having a conversation and someone takes a picture of it, don't talk to me. Number two, I need folks to just use your phone, computer, whatever you use for the internet. Please stop telling me this is the worst trade offer for a star in the history of life. I literally came on this podcast and told you Clyde Drexler was traded for Otis Thorpe in a singular first round pick. Charles Barkley was traded for Tim Perry, Jeff Hornacek, and Andrew Lang. Not a single pick. Not a single pick, buddy.
It's DK with the receipts.
No, I'm just like, hey, man, why are we doing this? We don't have to do this. Do you think we have to do this?
Probably not. No. like, also, I would just say, like, it's also okay to say that this Miami package isn't great for Portland. Like, if Portland had one less guard that they like in their core, this probably moves a little bit quicker than it does.
Mm-hmm.
But because they have Anthony Simons, who is in the same tier as Tyler Hero and on a better contract, in my opinion, because they just drafted Shaedon Sharpe last year, and because they also just drafted Scoot Henderson not even a month ago, like, no, they probably don't want 4 of 120 of Tyler Hero. And that's okay. And because of who they already have, and then whatever other thoughts you have about Tyler Hero, if it's the defense, if it's the rim pressure, whatever. Yeah, if that's the best player or best young player that you could offer, yeah, it's understandable that Portland doesn't like that. And that's okay. That does not mean that a trade ain't going to get done, because it probably will if I had to bet today. It just is what it is. It's fine. Like, I don't think that's hate to say. There's a reason, again, that he's been in trade, him specifically, has been in trade rumors for like the last year and a half, 2 years, every time a star has become available. And those stars have not come to Miami, because other teams have stepped up slash, well, if this is the headline, I think we okay. I think we can do better. It's consistent with what it's been. But I'll sprinkle that one in.
For me, I still think Miami has the desire to get this done more than any team. So we'll see if anyone swoops in. I do wonder, after you said that, is this, hey, who wants Tyler Hero? Hey, who wants Yusuf Nurkic? Can we fit those into this and kind of move some of these pieces around? Like, I wonder how much of that factors in as well. But we're going to find out. I got a feeling. Mark it down, next 5 days.
In the next 5 days? Okay. I mean, that good for my mental health, so I don't have to just get this done. If it's him to Miami or if a mystery team swoops in, like, we'll take the gamble. Whichever way it goes, it's fine. Let's get this done. But yeah. Okay, let's get this done. Let's talk about free agency a little bit. We started with the Bol Bol way. I'm curious to see where he goes for very obvious reasons. But Malik Beasley, you are a Milwaukee Buck. 1 year at the minimum. How do you feel about the fit?
I probably would have liked it even more last year. But I think we saw what Milwaukee's trying to do with their wing room, with their guards, trying to have optionality, different small lineups. I think Malik Beasley's ability to shoot, and also more importantly, his willingness to shoot, is something that should help the Bucks. I definitely see the fit because he can add that spacing. But if it's not working, you can pivot. So it's not like Malik Beasley, hey, you have to play this 20 minutes. If you ain't got it, you ain't got it. I am curious to see how the defense holds up and then how much freedom he has or uses offensively, who he plays with, those kind of things. How is he used? But we know he can score. We know he's going to shoot. He should be able to help their small lineups out. So I dig it. What were your thoughts?
I think at the minimum, this is a really fun bet for Milwaukee. And I just did not anticipate Malik Beasley falling to the prove it deal pile. Like, I figured he would be, if not, I don't think he would have been like a full mid-level guy, but like taxpayer mid-level, I guess like 5-6, somewhere in that range. Like, I figured some team would give him the shot there. And even if it is still just a 1+1, it would be in that range versus I will go to Milwaukee. I think depending on who he's playing with, like, obviously you have Giannis, which is keeping an eye on the cleanup surgery that he had 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And that was announced yesterday. So that's interesting. Hope he's all right. Hope is just minor and not something that sets off some stuff like a year or two down the road. So we'll just see. But like, if you have Brooke, you have Giannis, you have your defensive foundation, you still have Drew. I don't think Malik Beasley starts, but you do have room to start him if you want. When you have that kind of defensive infrastructure around him, like, I think if he does, end up getting the starting job. If it's Drew, Malik Beasley, Chris Middleton, Giannis, and Brooke, that's pretty spacey. And to your volume point, I think that's very important. But I think he is going to stress defenses in that manner in a way that, like, Grayson Allen didn't, in a way that Joe Ingles definitely didn't, in a way that Pat Connaughton didn't. Like, they can shoot and will shoot. But Malik is getting it up. And we saw what that Utah run looked like for him. Even the Minnesota run, if you want to go back. So I think that's an interesting fit for him. And your point about being able to pivot, I think, is a good one. I think that's also where the contract value walks in. If the defense is still actively harmful, I don't think the defense is good. He's in an infrastructure where it could be mitigated and really unlock what he does offensively. But in a vacuum, like, no, the defense isn't good. You can still go to Grayson or go to Pat or insert young guard here. And I also wonder, like, just like the Norm Powell rumblings and stuff, and teams try to get him, whether he's a part of a James Harden trade or whatever. If he's available, if you get Malik Beasley at the minimum, does that open up, okay, we got Pat and Grayson and something. Young prospect that we have that might not get playing time or a pick or some seconds or whatever the case may be. Can we get into the Norman Powell race? That really makes me feel good about Milwaukee kind of retooling things and getting some more athleticism in the room, getting some more shooting in the room, getting some more downhill pressure in the room. Like, if that's what this turns into, like, a month from now, and Norman Powell, you are also a Milwaukee Buck, I don't know, no reporting, but, like, if that's what it turns into, I really like this deal with Malik being more of a depth piece. But on its own, like, I like it. This is a place where he can succeed. We'll see where the defense lands, but I'm here.
The one thing I wanted to point out, I think it's interesting. You mentioned the Prove It deal. I think we're going to see those come earlier and earlier for some folks.
Yeah.
Just with some teams maybe not having the mid-level, maybe not having space, using trades, just a new market, more flexibility. And it's interesting the teams that are popping up.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing some pretty young-ish talent go to some more established teams. And I wonder if the rhythm there is, you may have to prove it, but you have an opportunity to contribute to success. And if this team is very successful, well,
makes it easier
you
to
earn yourself a bag.
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, I have more opportunity here. That may not have as much impact these days.
Yeah.
So it's very curious to see Malik Beasley take this deal. So now if he has a run where he makes a bunch of shots in the playoffs or he contributes to a winning streak or whatever it's going to be, now he goes in next season sky high. And I wonder how many of those deals we're going to keep seeing because, A, yeah, teams have to spend a bunch of money, but at the same time, they have spent some money. So this is where it starts to get a little fun.
And I like that because even with Malik, like we just saw him as the member of the Lakers and did not get much postseason burn. And so it's cool for him to win. Okay, well, didn't make it on this conference finals team. Let's go to Milwaukee. You just won a title 2 years ago and obviously has the ceiling of a championship team if they remain healthy. It's another bet. So it's cool for him to go from that to that versus the Laker run didn't work for him. Now he's on insert team here, to your point, getting more volume, getting more opportunity before a team that doesn't have that postseason upside. So that's an interesting point. I like that. I'm curious to see how that develops as well, league-wide in the free agency period. On that note, Mo Bamba, also a former Laker. I just made this connection. It's funny, like Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba, they had the options. The Lakers were like, nah, we might circle back though. And they both sign elsewhere in the East. Within a few days of each other, it's like, okay, well, I guess not. I guess we'll never know. Mo Bamba to the Sixers on a one-year deal. I would imagine that's at the minimum. I haven't seen the exact terms on that yet, so I can update them on the next pod if necessary. But Mo Bamba as a Sixer. And I am intrigued, especially if the three-point shooting remains real. He is a pick-and-pop big. He is someone that can block a lot of shots. He's not a great rebounder, but he's a solid one on the defensive glass. And Philadelphia, sans Joel Embiid, just did not have enough people on the defensive glass that can really provide impact. And if ultimately Nick Nurse trusts him more than Paul Reed, who's still currently a restricted free agent, and from everything that I've seen from like Philly people and stuff, they still want to bring Paul Reed back. I do wonder if a team throws an offer sheet out there, but they want to bring Paul Reed back. Like, that's a pretty solid three-center room. Like, obviously, Joel Embiid's an MVP talent. If you have Bamba and Paul Reed to kind of cycle through, if we want a more traditional big, a more traditional dropper at the level big in Mo Bamba, and if we want a more switchy big with Paul Reed, they at least have that optionality in the big man room. It's an interesting bet. I also just kind of zoom out and calculate how many backup center options the Sixers have tried to solidify behind Joel Embiid. And it's like, okay, Trez can roll, but everything else. All right, cool. Paul Reed could do a bunch of stuff, but you made the note about Paul Reed and drop, et cetera, et cetera. It's been wild to watch Philly cycle as much as they have the last few years. We'll see if Mobamba hits. Like, I think it's an interesting bet. How'd you feel about it?
I think the last thing that you stated as far as it being an interesting wager is the fun part. Like, I don't know if this is Paul Reed insurance, but to have him as the third big with the upside he could have, I mean, if you had Dwayne Dedman in that role slotted in, I can understand a Mobamba flyer. I think the tough part for me is, what is the pathway? How many minutes is he going to get? How many reps is he going to get? What's going to pop on this Philly team? Or is this just, he's very talented and we need a third big?
Yeah. It's also refreshing
he's got
that
size.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's refreshing that among the Philly flyers that they've made in the backcourt, in the front court, it's cool that Mo Bamba's a young flyer.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying on the free agent market as opposed to grizzled vet that can play behind you well. So that at least gives you a little bit of upside there. So I'm intrigued. You can tell you that's all that.
Oh, no. I mean, you tie that in with the Jackson Hayes move as well. Again, these young bigs trying to find an opportunity. And these are teams that usually are able to add that kind of upside to their roster. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued by that.
I got you.
But if the role's there, if the defense is there, if the minutes are there, it could be fun. If not, be tough sledding.
Tough sledding indeed. We had a sign and trade with Dallas. Grant Williams, you are a Dallas Maverick. 4 years, $54 million. The Spurs getting Reggie Bullock out of that deal, and also a unprotected 2030 first round pick swap with Dallas, which that's really interesting to me. For it to be that far down the line, it's an unprotected swap. It's a little bit of, hey, one, Wimby just may be really, 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 really good, and we could just get an earlier pick while we have Wimby. Two, I am keeping an eye on how y'all build this roster out around Luka. Because in 6 years, will he still be there? And if not, and this is an unprotected first round pick swap, hey man, we might get double whammy. So let's see. That's an interesting bit of work there from San Antonio, and then Boston getting 2 second rounders, and then with Grant Williams, though, right coming in, I imagine it's just a big TPE for Grant Williams. How do you feel about the Grant Williams fit in Dallas?
I like the move. I think he fits very well. For me, Dallas, understanding the assignment this offseason, has stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Working to get back to their formula around Luka, around Kyrie. You have those two. You used to have Dorian Finney-Smith to defend the wings, to give you some lineup versatility. Grant can now slot into that role. And you probably trust Grant shooting a little bit more than DFS to a degree. He can give you that lineup versatility. He can space the floor. I'm curious to see if the shooting does hold up. I will say that much.
Mm-hmm.
We've had the conversation about, hey, the percentage has improved, but is it changing how teams defend him? Is it changing how teams guard him? So does a new scenario, a new role, more freedom potentially, does that open that up even more? Do we see because we've seen the aggression from Grant Williams. Does he feel better about it now? And you got to remember, with Dallas, especially with Luka, the way that he can get teams in rotation, type of shots that can be generated in Dallas, there's going to be opportunity there. I'm curious to see, like, the lineups. Like, do we see him and Josh Green on the court together at any points in time? Does he help lead the defensive attack? But I'm intrigued by the moves that Dallas has made. I mean, if you're telling me, hey, we added some defense. You saw they tried to go bigger with defense. Didn't quite work out. We added Seth Curry shooting. Got Dante Exum, which Dante and Frank Ntilikina is hilarious. There's some more room for Jaden Hardy. Got our bigs right. I think there's positives for Dallas. What do you think of Grant and Dallas?
I like it. And you hit on most of the stuff, so I won't rehash it, especially the lineup versatility portion. And him kind of sliding into that DFS role where, like, I don't think he's as good of a defender as Dorian was, but also maybe trusted more as a shooter and more of a connector. Because Dorian, I think that was the big bump. We talked about it throughout the pod. That was kind of the big jump for Dorian, where it's like, oh, snap, he's tagging closeouts. He's doing that quicker now. He's making quicker decisions with the ball in his hand. Grant already kind of has that, and we've seen that in Boston. And so I think looking for a little bit more juice in the half court is what Dallas ultimately wants. Because they know with Luka on the floor, they can guarantee themselves a top 10 offense. And with him and Kyrie on the floor, you can guarantee yourself an elite offense. But it can get a little stagnant. And that's why I originally liked the Kyrie trade on court, where it's like, okay, he's going to introduce some, we can fly him off this stagger and we can get downhill immediately. Or you grab a defensive board, he could push it early. And so now adding that half court element of Grant Williams against a tilted defense, or Grant Williams the play finisher as a shooter, I think is going to be interesting for Dallas. So I like it. And then zooming out, I kind of echo what you said. Like, I kind of like what Dallas has done this offseason. Now, as we get into season preview time in a couple months, I may find myself in, hey, what does this mean in light of what the rest of the West looks like? And so that's probably going to have me in a headlock in a little bit as the team's fully formed. But, like, I like the steps that Dallas has taken so far. It's going to be cool. What else do we have? Matisse Thybulle, you were a Portland Trailblazer, and then you were going to be a Dallas Maverick, and then Portland said, nah, you are actually going to remain in Portland as they match a 3-year, $33 million deal. Chris Haynes just dropped some extra details on the deal like 20 minutes ago. So nice to see that tweet on my timeline. Player option in year 3 for Matisse Thybulle, a 15% trade kicker for Matisse Thybulle, which is interesting. And if you care about this portion of it, 50% of annual salary must be paid by October 1st. So Matisse Thybulle getting the bag and getting the bag early. So shout out to him. So how do we now feel about Matisse in Portland?
I still like the fit. I think the defense is very important. I think he fills a gap for them. It's a little tough because we're waiting to see exactly what the totality of the team is going to look like. But to be able to bring him in off the bench, I enjoy that. They're going to need someone to be able to defend those type of players alongside Jeremy Grant. So I think you have some optionality as far as being able to play those two together with a big, maybe go smaller if you need to, without getting in the way of what you're building towards with Shaedon Sharpe. You know, you still have opportunity there. I think the toughest part, do you think the shot's going to hold up? 38% from three in Portland, I believe.
Yeah.
3.9 attempts a game in 22 games. Do you think that holds up?
I think it's complicated. I think it absolutely can because of the quality looks he's going to get. But the quality of looks that he's going to get is kind of the problem, though. If that makes sense. It's like it's a self-feeding loop. Like, they are leaving you open because they don't believe you can shoot. And he knocked down those shots in Portland. And so I don't think that was enough to shift what the scouting report was on the team. So he will continue to get those quality of look. And so it will not surprise me if he continues to knock those down. My question then becomes, how many of these does he need to hit? And do we see the volume go from 3.9 to like 5, depending on what his minute load is? What is the volume / efficiency blend and the game blend necessary for now it becomes, okay, we got at least soft close on the team. And then if that's the case, what does the ball handling look like? Because that's something that I've kept an eye on. Can he effectively attack those closeouts and do so consistently? Does that open up things? Because if he gets to that point and he's able to nail that, this deal looks like a steal. And I still think there's solid value for what Matisse does. Okay. But it looks even better if, okay, the shot is real and defenses now have to shift a little bit. Like, he's never going to get like Steph Curry attention. Like, we run him off the line at all costs. But if now a dude that's peeling in early on the weak side has to get back out to him, and that opens up some more stuff for Portland's offense, it becomes a better deal for them.
Yeah, I look at your point on the, does it shift the defense? I don't know if he's going to make enough to do that. I think it's just the willingness to take and make them. And I think the willingness he showed, even with teams sagging all the way off, was positive. But if you go back, look at the difference between Josh Hart with the Knicks and Josh Hart with the Blazers. The context weren't too crazy wild. But once you get to the point of, I'm not taking these anymore, and the defense is helping off of you, that's when you're in the danger zone. So can he take and make enough of those? Can he drive closeouts, drive and kick? Can he be used as a screener? Are we going to see the cutting? Do you do enough of the things to where, hey, this makes sense? To where he's kind of a little bit of a moving target to a degree.
Gotcha.
Or is it just going to be use space? Make or miss.
And that will be interesting to track. If I can circle back very quickly to the Dame portion, just because the Heat just tweeted out that their trade with OKC is official now. So that was the big Oladipo trade. Sent him and the 2029 and 2030 second round pick. Miami gets a trade exception to that. And I only note that because there was at least an option to where you could rope OKC into a larger deal with Portland. And so with this deal becoming official, and it's just a two-team deal as of now, like, I wonder if that's just kind of it for that portion of it. And so if it's going to be a third team in any potential Miami-Portland deal with Damian Lillard, if it's going to be, like, if it's Brooklyn now or San Antonio, which on the San Antonio portion, them getting Reggie Bullock, like, obviously Tyler Hero's better. You don't let that prevent you from getting Tyler. But, like, in terms of the money used there to just absorb Reggie, I wonder if that takes them out as the third team with Tyler, or they just move someone else on their roster and make that work. So just keeping an eye on that front, just to kind of rope all that back in together.
Since we're doing things, as I was scrolling, Patty Mills, you are a Houston Rocket.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Okay. Will he remain a Houston Rocket? Because I thought he was going to. It's all very confusing.
Wait, where is Patty Mills?
We now have our podcast title. We did it.
Wait, I thought he was a whole Thunder.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. And so is that just not happening anymore?
Nah, it's probably like part of a transition tracker. So this is going to sound like a really dumb segment when it's like, well, the next trade is he is now a Thunder.
Okay, well, we will use that as part one or part 1.5. We are doing the best that we can. It's summer league for everybody. Speaking of summer league, Vegas portion hasn't started yet. I am flying to Vegas sometime after this podcast recorded early on a Thursday afternoon. We do have California Classic thoughts. We do have some Utah Summer League thoughts. We've had some returning players kick things off. Keegan Murray averaging 35 a game across two games, shooting the absolute leather off the ball. Chet Holmgren's back. A little shakier offensively than we saw the first time around, but the defense still seems to be fun. We got the Brandon Miller debut, and we have thoughts. Where do you want to start?
Talk to me about Keegan.
Let's talk about it.
You've been very, very high. He's officially graduated to me from Summer League.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll be seeing that man again. He was cooking against the Miami Heat. For me, very encouraging. You like the aggression. You like the mindset. I had a tough time digesting the two games just because Keegan Murray's good. He was good last year at Summer League and showed off the pick and roll chops and the being able to come off screens. And wow, he can really play. And then he did it in the league. And then he elevated it again in Summer League. So it's nice to see him take that opportunity, mm-hmm. take it seriously, and execute. You know, that's how you want to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
I got my returning player. This is what we need from you. This is your opportunity. Go ahead and knock it out. We get it done. We're good.
Yeah.
Can practice. Can hoop it up. Get better. But, you know, you got to give him a thumbs up. That's professionalism. What were your thoughts on Keegan?
I've really enjoyed the Keegan experience. And like the Miami game is obviously going to pop. He just had over 40 in that one and just gave anyone buckets that he wanted to in that game. But to your point, like just kind of building off of what he did last year and seeing that amplified was cool. But I also like Sacramento putting the ball in his hands a little bit. And we were talking about this during our watch party the other night, where it's like, okay, like, do I think Keegan's going to be running 12, 15, 16 ball screens a game in Sacramento this year? No, I don't. I do think one of the things that we talked about throughout the year with Keegan was obviously the off-ball value that he had, but how he can improve on the margins in attacking closeout and just his general comfort getting downhill. And that's where I like Sacramento saying, okay, now you bring the ball up, you initiate this ball screen. Let's see what you can do. Or we're going to run you off the stagger, but no, your goal for this stretch of games, and I imagine he's done after these two, but your goal for these games, don't just settle for a pull-up. Get all the way downhill. Let's see what that looks like. Can you make reads from there if you fully collapse the defense? And it hasn't been perfect. One assist in two games, which obviously assists aren't the end-all, be-all for how willing you are as a passer and stuff like that. But one assist, 8 turnovers. But I like that he has been aggressive. He's been seeking out those downhill reps. And I like that the handle seems to be at least a little bit tight. And like that's kind of the big thing I want to see from Keegan, because if he's able to improve tightness of the handle, he can access more space. The closeout attacks become more fluid, they become more deadly. He can be more efficient. And that's where you may see him have a slight bump in free throw rate in year two with Sacramento. And that's going to be important. So that's kind of where I'm like, no, it's not going to be the same usage at all. But if he's more comfortable in his role and can now drive deeper into the paint and pressure defenses in a different way because of these on-ball reps that he's getting in the summer, and he feels better about the handle, he can now access the paint more. I like what that could mean for him and what it could mean for Sacramento's offense overall.
Any comparisons to that one summer league where Desmond Main just did everything with the ball in his hands?
I can see the outline of that for sure. Then again, I guess the difference is like, I think they wanted Desmond to have more on-ball reps, period. And I don't think that's going to be the same for Keegan, because I do think, obviously, you get the renegotiation with Domantas Sabonis. He's locked in. And De'Aaron Fox is obviously locked in. And they like a lot of what they got from Kevin Huerter. Like, I think in a perfect world, Keegan improves on ball to the point where Kevin just slides to fourth in that kind of hierarchy. And Keegan just take on more on-ball reps. But I think it's slightly different in that regard. But this also could set the foundation for, hey, maybe year three or year four, maybe Keegan can just be our secondary ball handler now if he feels more comfortable running stuff. And so I do like the Desmond Kopp in that regard.
I think it's more building onto his package. We're now, hey, we can, and they did it to a degree last year, so it's not necessarily groundbreaking new, but hey, maybe you can run this with this unit. You come off your staggers, now we're more willing to maybe put you in this pick and roll. More experience that way. So fun to track. Who else you got in it, guys?
Like, I was just on the chat front, like, one, just happy to see him back on the court. The first half of the first summer league game, I was like, he is trying to knock off some rust. That guy is tired. Oh, no. He missed the dunk. The post fades weren't going. Oh, no. And then something just clicked. And here's the space open drive from Chet Holmgren at the top of the key. And here are these swats. And he is still embracing contact like we saw last year in summer league. Where it's like, okay, he still isn't strong enough to where you want him to be right now. But he's put on weight. He is stronger. He's seeking out the contact, even if the finishes aren't going yet. I like the process of that. I was mostly encouraged from what I saw from Chet through two games. And I also just briefly note the Jalen Williams sisters were also fun. I would imagine they're also done, or maybe we see like one in Vegas for one or both of them. But wing Jalen absolutely has graduated. It's kind of been tracking what is the comfort with the pull-up looking like. But other than that, we know he can bring on ball defensively. We know what he can do on the ball offensively, running ball screens, can make all the reads, can get downhill for sure. So just watching the pull-up comfort with him. And then the other Jalen, just seeing get the three-point shooting was going to translate as he started taking those in the second half of the year above the break, which are pretty valuable for bigs. We know what he does as a charge taker. And it gave me a good chuckle watching him draw a crucial charge, I think, the first summer league game. So those would, I guess, cap my thunder thoughts on summer league right now. But no, like, I like mostly what I saw from Chet.
How much of the initiating contact popped for you?
I will say, like, it wasn't a super big pop just because that's really what stood out last year. So it was more so just a continuation and a slight build of what we saw in last summer league. And so it was more so looking like, okay, how much more space is he separating since he's put on weight and put on strength? So that was cool. I will say if there's one drawback, like, he's added strength, but like, he obviously not the same type of player that Keegan is. But watching him on some of these drives, the ball is just the handle's so loose. Like, he's 7 foot, so you should expect that for a center. But with the skill that he does have, that's going to be a bat he's going to tap into quite a bit, at least relative to other centers, other guys in his position. So, like, watching him navigate space and navigate tight quarters is going to be important for him, which is why I wouldn't mind seeing him get, like, a two-game stretch in Vegas and seeing, okay, let's run a little bit more delay with Chet. That may not be our offense or how we utilize him in the regular season, but let's run some delay with Chet and see if that opens up some fake handoffs. Can he handle that? Can he deal with teams swiping down at the nail, pick it up? And if he does pick it up on the gather, what does the improved strength look like from there? Is he absorbing contact into the line, or is he losing the ball when he gets bumped on the gather? And so, like, those are the kind of small things I want to kind of track with him. But still, overall, it's a good sign that he is embracing that contact instead of shying away from it.
I think for me, it's the drives, but also the screening. Like, those are the two things where I'm like, hey, I just want to see how this builds, how this grows. There's an area of opportunity here to understand where the help is, understand what teams are going to switch, getting to your spots earlier. Those little things. But the screening, I would love to see him just get some hits.
Same.
So now he can open up the roll. He can open up pop. I like the idea with the slips that we've seen so far in Salt Lake City. I just don't know how effective it is.
Yeah.
In the sense that you're putting a lot of pressure on the ball handler to kind of make a play.
Yeah. We can slide to the rookie portion of the program really quickly. We'll start with Brandon Miller, who's like the highlighter of this portion of the summer league. Again, Vegas is going to pop. We're going to see Wimby, all that good stuff. But two games for Brandon Miller so far. 12 points, 50% on twos, 44% on threes on solid volume, 75 from the line, 4.5 boards, 5 assists, but 5 turnovers. We'll keep an asterisk on that. There's been like some scorekeeper stuff in the first game, whatever. High turnover rate in the first two games. How have you felt about the Brandon Miller experience so far?
I felt fine. I mean, especially with a young player, a rookie, it's more just establishing a base, taking notes, trying to figure out, okay, what's this look like right now? How does this grow? I am interested to see how many games he plays. Like, I feel like that's the one thing I kind of miss from Summer League, to where you can really see the incremental, hey, this guy got better during this session.
Mm-hmm.
I've liked the aggression offensively. Some of the passing has popped, even though it's been a few Summer League specials where I'm like, hey, that's a really good play. And then I rewind it and I'm like, oh my gosh, what was the defense doing? And then I lose all track of thoughts. So we're going to keep working and watching the offensive end. To me, it's the defense right now. And this is not like a scathing, oh my gosh, he can't defend. I'm just keeping an eye on that defense. It does feel like he has some instincts in there. But again, he's young. So he's going to have to work on being ready, reacting less. It feels like he relies on his arms defensively. When he's guarding one-on-one on ball, it feels like he's working to contain. If you start to move, I'm going to fake at you. I'm going to use my arm to reach at you. He's using his length that way,
yeah,
as opposed to contain, contest. The screen navigation has to get better. I mean, you got to be able to take the physicality to the ball handler. Don't take two arms to the screener, and now you get yourself a silly foul.
Yeah.
For no reason. I balance that with some of the off-ball stuff that we've seen. That's always a positive indicator for me with a young player. Is this landing? Do you understand your help responsibilities? Can you help him recover? I've seen that. And so we'll see how the on-ball defense grows, but I've seen the effort as far as, hey, I'm going to show help. I'm going to flow back out to the corner, or I'm going to help on this drive, try and recover back to mine. Some of the closeouts, footwork.
Yeah.
Got to work on that. Got to grow. But I'm keeping an eye on the defense right now. I think the offense is going to come.
Uh-huh.
And I think you mentioned the fact that he's had the ball in his hands
more. Yeah.
Which is going to be the opposite of the Jabari Smith Jr. experience from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, hey, man.
Just go stand out there.
So we'll keep an eye on that. But the defense is where my head's going. What about you?
Yeah, I'll start with the defense, because I haven't had a lot of fun. Obviously, it's two games of summer league. He's very young. There's plenty of time to improve. And I'm glad you mentioned the off-ball instinct, because that's something like, if he's in early, he is able to get back out, and he has the length. Like, that's projectable if he cleans up the footwork stuff. But like, I watched him. I went back through like the film closer this morning. And what immediately came to mind, and maybe it's just me having like gamer brain, I was like, you know, he plays defense like his left trigger doesn't work. Like, he doesn't get in the stance. And to your point about using the arms, it's like he's there, but like he can't, the slides aren't fluid. Like, the flexibility isn't there for him to turn and really mirror dude. Like, if he's there, cool. If you move him a little bit, it's kind of tough. And then that bleeds to the screen navigation, which isn't great right now. It's just like, settle in. And I want to see what like the hip flexibility looks like moving forward with him. Again, it's been two games. I'm not super concerned, but like, it's something that popped for me as someone that's now, okay, he's in the NBA. Let me watch him a little bit more closely and see how this projects and stuff. But like, that popped for me. Positively, though, the shot's just there. And he can get it a whole lot of different ways. He's going to get more on-ball, you know, to your Jabari point, he's going to get more on-ball reps. I don't think he's going to be like, it's easy to see what the point for projection is now that I like watch him. I don't think he gets that in year one, but I was encouraged by some of the interior reads that he was making. And even on some of the turnovers that he had, I think half of his turnovers were of the bad pass variety. And like, I only had a problem with one of those. It was a transition opportunity with him and I think Kai Jones. And they were standing like eight, they were running like 8 inches away from each other. He tried to force me to pass. And I was like, well, don't do that. Like, I appreciate you being unselfish on 2v1, but the spacing ain't right. Just take it at this point. But other than that, it's high pick and roll. We got two to the ball temporarily. Let me try to float in this lob pass. Didn't put enough on it yet, so that was picked off. It's like, okay, I'm glad that you can see that. And it wasn't like a, here's pressure, retreat, hold the ball, look, ball over my head, now the defense recovers. Like, he recognized it quickly. The pass just didn't have enough on it. And there's like, you know, a couple of dump offs. I was like, okay, I'm glad that you're seeing this stuff. And I think him being able to make those interior reads are important, especially in light of the finishing questions that I have with him. And those have popped up early. But if he can make, if he can do that, and he's playing off of LaMelo, who should, in theory, be able to draw two to the ball, if he's able to tap more tilted defenses, that sets up some of those under deep passes for him. And the fact that he's already seen that early is encouraging to me. So I think Brandon's going to be fine. I'm with you. I'm tracking the defense, but I think he's going to be okay. Any other summer league players you want to shout out before we move to the W portion?
Man, let me tell you real quick.
Okay.
Jaime Jaquez Jr., buddy, I totally understand why Miami drafted him. Put a Miami Heat player in 2K, and it's going to pop out this guy. You create a build, it's going to pop him out. I just like the versatility. I like the activity defensively. He can work with the ball in his hands, cutting. He'll set screens. I reached the point after the first game, or actually halfway through the first game, okay, just what's the shot look like? That's all I need to know. What's the shot look like, and where are these shots being generated from? Everything else, fantastic. He said his favorite player was Jimmy Butler.
It shows.
I totally believe it. Yeah. I totally believe it. That is 100% truth. Jovic for the Heat has been fun to watch. The aggression from him, the usage has been what's fun to me. Those two things where it just really pops. Oh, he's looking to make plays. And he's setting screens. He's driving, taking shots, flying off staggers, coming off screens with the ball. I like that. That's fun. Pojinski from the Warriors. I totally understand that pick now. I want to apologize if I said anything inflammatory because I totally get it. He just has a shiftiness to him. He plays with a good pace. You can see the vision on ball, driving closeouts, being able to knock down shots. He just fits the Warriors. Who else? Agbaji. I want to give him a salute. I'm still staying on that island. I think he's got a lot of potential. I think the shooting is going to pop. I think the defensive activity is going to continue to grow. Kenneth Lofton Jr. and Jake LaRavia, salute to you two.
Mm-hmm.
Jake LaRavia shooting the heck out of the ball. Do you like Jake LaRavia getting more reps with the ball in his hands in summer league?
I dig it.
I'm about to say, I almost sound like Nikias.
Hey, you do a pause on him for 2 years. You know, you start to pick up the Nikaiisms, I guess. I don't know, the Steve-isms.
Well, actually, you know what? I got to treat my co-host with respect and kindness. What do you think of Charlotte's bigs?
Ah, I see. I am intrigued. Well,
Wait a minute. You need to tell me you delivered 98 seconds on the old man in the three on the Charlotte Hornets. We come here and I lob you a Charlotte Hornets question and you hit me with the I'm intrigued.
I've been slandered enough for the Charlotte takes on multiple platforms. Like, you know what, let me just keep this short and sweet. No, I'm intrigued. I still kind of question, like, hey, you have invested in Mark Williams. What is going to be the James Naji portion, etc. But like, I like them though. I like them. I hope they find them. They're able to carve out some time for him at some point. I like them. Also, if he counts as a big, like on the other side of the spectrum, Kai Jones is making some steps, but like also is kind of where I am with Kai. And it's unfortunate because he is really fun. When he times the weak side rotation right, it doesn't matter what you're taking. He can block it. The rim running, the transition stuff is fun. There's just got to be more. And he's still young overall, so maybe he finds it, but it's got to be. Did you have any other shout-outs before I get to my list?
Nope. Get it going, Nikias. This is your time. This is your season.
This is my season. It's funny. You had a longer list than I did. So I was like, huh. This is a fun plot twist. This is
upset of the century, baby.
This is cool. I'll stick with Miami. Orlando Robinson, hello. Big Lando, hello. Taking trail threes, Steve. He is attacking from the top of the key and drawing fouls. You still see the lack of vertical pop. So, like, the finishing numbers at the rim haven't been great overall. But, like, the aggression, the processing speed as a passer has perked up for him. You're not going to confuse him with, like, Jokic or even Jovic for that matter. But, like, that has perked up, and I think that's going to be important, especially, if, you know, he got the standard contract this year. If you are projecting that Damian Lillard will be a Miami Heat player at some point, if Dame gets two to the ball, it is cool that I can watch Orlando Robinson on a short roll and not feel bad. Doesn't mean he's going to be a league guy, but someone that can, okay, he has enough touch to get the push shot going. He can pick out cutters. He can pick out doing the corner runs a little bit quickly. It's been fun to watch those. You already hit on Jovic. I'll just quickly note the improved strength and him seeking out contact has been lots of fun. Him drawing fouls has been fun to track. Defensively, I wonder who he guards or what his ideal scheme is in his year two, so we'll see. But, like, I keep an eye on that because, like, they've had him. He was chasing Keegan some in the Sacramento games. Like, he does not navigate screens nearly well enough to do that. I don't know if that's his portion. I don't know about him as a switch big yet. The drop, like, feel for him, going back to some of the rookie flashes and stuff here, like, it's fine, but I want to see how they build that out. So defensive versatility remains a question for me on that front. But, like, the offensive stuff is fun. Chase Audiz from Miami, that man gets after it defensively. I am intrigued. He's at worst, he feels like you are a Skyforce. And then if someone goes down in December, Miami has called him up. And now he is hounding your favorite shooting guard or wing for 14 minutes. He's fun. Who else we got? We'll go to San Antonio very quickly. We haven't seen Wimby yet, but Julian Chimfeni. Hello. Hi. Hello. That man shot the leather off the ball to close out the year for San Antonio last year. That man is shooting the leather off the ball in summer league this year. I don't know how much he's going to play in Vegas. I hope we see him. He does not care about your shot contest. And the fact that he's also parlaying that shot, I think he's leading summer league in free throw attempts so far. Obviously, short sample, things just started on Monday. But that three-point shooting plus the drives for him, seems to know where he wants to go and how to get there. That's a fun flyer. And then you zoom out to the deal that he signed, I think 4 years, 12 mil. That could look like a steal for San Antonio if they carve out rotation minutes for him. I've really enjoyed watching him play. In Golden State, you already hit the pot, man. Lester Quiñones, hello. Unabashed gunner from deep. Also some fun rim flash, especially in the game last night. That man wants a job. I have really enjoyed watching him play as well. I'll cut the list there so you can dig into the W stuff. But just some quick shout outs for the early summer league portion. We'll dig into some early summer league thoughts next week, naturally, with things kicking off this weekend. But wanted to give some quick hat tips real quick. On the W portion, it's funny that we had some news break during our extended pre-pod meeting. So we end up getting this in here. So that's neat. Breonna Stewart and Fisa Collier, they are planning to launch a new women's 3v3/1-on-1 league called Unrivaled next January. That will be based in Miami, which I think is cool, giving in the release. And I quote, they are aiming to give the top WNBA players an option to play domestically in the offseason once the league's new prioritization rules go into full effect next season. I am intrigued by this. Especially the portion where the salary is going to be competitive, or at least they plan on it being if they get the funding for it, where the salary is going to be competitive to their WNBA salary. So keep the players stateside. Stationing it in Miami is fun for very obvious reasons. But like the 3v3 element seems really cool. And if they're able to thread that needle, like it's just really good for the women to have more options stateside versus it being we play in the W or we go overseas. Or we play the W and during the offseason, we go overseas, or it's Athletes Unlimited. Which, on that note, I do wonder what the reaction was to that. Because I think in a vacuum, it's good to just have more options out there. But, like, I could also see how you are building this out if you're AU. And you get players like Alicia Gray committing this past season. And now it's, hey, here's Breonna Stewart and Nafisa Collier. We're going to recruit some of these top players in W. Like, they've already reached out to Chelsea Gray. She was someone else that was mentioned in the article from ESPN's Ramona Shelburne. It's like, huh. I wonder how much of it, how do you find the balance between it's good they have more options versus, hey, we are competing? Because I think the Unrivaled season plans to go from January to March. And AU is what, January to February? Just what that clash is going to be like. And if they're able to work something out there. But overall, like, I'm intrigued. I like it.
I hope it's not a competitive nature. I hope this is more viewed as alternatives to each other.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity to provide more opportunities for more women to stay during the off season and to be able to build both of these things up. And if you have the investment and you have the capital on both sides and both are growing, it's fun. And they're different. One is 5-on-5. This is 3v3, 1-on-1 potentially. So, you know, more eyes, more opportunity, more jobs. It should be positive. And considering the rollout that we've seen on this Unrivaled, that we've literally seen in the last, 40 minutes? this appears to be very serious.
Yeah.
as far as trying to make this work. And I think that's possible. For me, I just want the work to continue.
Mm-hmm.
On everything to continue to progress on its way. I think this is a plus.
I'm right there with you. And even if you go back to AU and how it's kind of grown out, and now some of the games, you know, they had some games on CBS and games are being streamed in the WNBA app. And I imagine if this league takes off the way I think that it can, Unrivaled, if it's Breonna Stewart involved, it's DePisa Collier involved, it's Chelsea Gray involved, et cetera, et cetera. Like, would I be surprised if CBS Sports wants in? Or even if ESPN2 wants in or something like that, if you're able to build it out that way, it becomes more accessible. It's something that Breonna Stewart hit on in the article from Ramona Shelburne as well, is they feel like the biggest, it's just accessibility. If they see us play and they gain interest, that should carry over to the W season. And that's a similar thing to the AU season where, like you said, it's more 5-on-5. And I think just the vibes of the league, Unrivaled feels top 36 teams. Let's have some fun. AU, it's more traditional 5-on-5. They ship the teams over with a weekly draft and stuff, but it's more so here's a vet trying to refine some things. Here's a young player trying to get a shot back in. And one of the biggest success stories of AU so far has been Lexi Brown and the way that she took off last year and further took off this season before getting sick. Hope she's okay. But you see more of those success stories there. And so there is enough difference between the two to where they should just complement each other. And to your point, add those extra offers. I think this could be a very good thing league-wide, especially if the sponsorships come in, the TV deals come in, et cetera, et cetera. You keep the women stateside, and thus maybe they're just fresher, not having to deal with overseas competition plus travel and everything else that comes with that, which could lead to a better W product, which then leads to more eyeballs, which then leads to more money, which means leads to more opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm excited.
Hey, last thought. I didn't mean to cut you off. Just the human element. Let them have the opportunity to continue to grow and spend time with their families.
Yeah.
And be home.
Yeah. Seven being one or the other. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. We've been too nice. The Indiana Fever and the Washington Mystics agreed to a trade. A 1v1 swap. Queen Egbo, you are a Mystic. Amanda Zowie B, you are a Fever. I didn't see this one coming. I didn't see this specific trade coming. I'm not surprised that Queen Egbo was traded just because of Aaliyah Boston soaking up all of those center minutes and being an all-star. And just in terms of the play style, they want to space things out. They're not going to as many two big lineups as they were earlier in the season. And so that kind of, it limits the opportunity for Queen Egbo, who I think is a good player. Queen traded for Amanda Zowie B as well on this leg. That's where the head tilt comes in. For me, I don't know if you can do that deal without getting a pick or two attached to that. It didn't have to be a first. But considering the contract differences, the age difference, the talent level difference, it was surprising to me that that was just a 1v1 swap. This very much feels like we need a bet in the room that is okay with not playing as much, which fits. But that also just doesn't feel like the greatest asset management to not get something else on top of that. If you're the Mystics, this is a really good swing for you, especially in light of Elena Deldon's been out for a little bit, but I imagine she comes back soon. You're out without Shakira Austin still for a couple of weeks. Now you just slot Queen Egbo in there and her ability to rim run, the face-up flashes that she's shown, the defense in particular, someone that can swat shots all over the place, but also is switchable, scheme versatile big. that's a really fun piece to add to your front court. And it also serves as like a doubling down of we are an elite defense. The Mystics still have the best defensive rating in basketball. Aces on their heels, but the Mystics are still at the top. And adding Queen, that's not going to hurt.
I hear you. I'm going to try and find a counter for you, Nikias.
Okay.
Is this Queen Egbo trade not just, hey, we are tripling down on Aliyah Boston and Alyssa Smith, and y'all are going to get minutes at five, and we're going to play all these guards, and we're going to try to figure it out?
It is. But to your Alyssa at the 5 point in particular, that is not defense. That is not a defense that you like right now. And as has been the issue with the Fever all year long, like when they went on their stretch, it was elite offense. The defense still wasn't great. And as they've now lost multiple games in a row, it's okay, the offense isn't what it was. And the defense remains a very big problem. And so I understand the long-term bit, the long-term bet 100%. Because I do think offensively in particular, like Melissa is maximized when she's at the five. She's a walking mismatch at the four. And so if you put her at the five, like, How many players can you slobble her one-on-one and feel good about it? And the W, like, it's not many. She's that kind of talent. But the defensive instincts, like, I don't really love that. I don't love Melissa in a drop. Like, I think switch is best for her right now, but even that gets kind of shaky. And so it becomes like, you know, in the short term, at the very least, like, her at the five doesn't seem super palatable to me right now because of where the defense is. Long term, I think it gets better. But even then, like, what's the ceiling of that? And all, ultimately, how often are you playing her at the five long term? If, you know, this is year one Aliyah, what is year three Aliyah going to look like?
That's why I said and Aliyah Boston.
Yeah, I get.
Because I feel like the Aliyah Boston, hey, here's 38, 39 minutes.
Not the Arike plan.
We want all of that. Go ahead and give us all of that, Queen. We love you. We appreciate you. Amanda's IB, let's get that versatility. We know you're going to shoot it, so...
Like, I definitely understand it being more of a stylistic fit, but like, we are also just multiple seasons removed from like the high level shooting from Amanda. And so if that bounces back, then this feels a little bit better. But again, you zoom out, it's just like, Queen's still on the rookie deal. This is year two for her. And you still have, I think, two more years of team control if you're Washington. It's just not the case with Amanda. So I'm just surprised. Like, even conceptually, I can talk myself into Queen, Amanda are different enough, the styles fit, whatever. For that to be a 1v1 is where I'm just like, nothing else? A 24 second, 24 third, a 25 second, a swap. Nothing.
Now, Nikias, you yelled at the sky for giving up all their picks.
Correct.
And the Mystics were like, actually, no, we don't, no, we're not.
Oh,
no,
this is a home run for the Washington Mystics. If you are the Fever, though, you are trading the premium asset in this deal. Like, this would be, if we're going to the Chicago thing, like, this would be Dallas moving Marina and just not getting anything back. Which makes me feel a lot better about it for Chicago. But then I was like, hey, man, you just gave Marina away in the signing. Why? And so that's where I'm like, hey, man, get a second. Get something that you could move later, even if you don't plan on, like, keeping the player, because we know how the W draft is right now in terms of the roster spots. And but, like, at least give you something to move later. So 1v1 was odd, but that's where we're at on that portion. We are going to get into our WNBA All-Star draft ahead of it happening on Saturday. Before that, any W shout-outs on your end before we dig into the draft portion? I have a quick one.
I'm gonna let you go first, though.
Okay. One, the Aces remain very, very good at basketball. Two.
Since you said that,
okay.
Salute to Alicia Clark. I don't know if there's an award outside of maybe the all defense, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a case? But she has been great for the Aces. She's been very good on both ends of the floor. So I wanted to give that quick salute. Who else did you have, Nikias?
I wanted to, again, aside from just the broad, Las Vegas is very good. Dallas gave him a run last night, but Las Vegas is very good. Won the game without Kelsey Plum. Alicia Clark, to your point, slid to the starting lineup, played well on both ends. Hello, Minnesota Lynx, who are doing the July thing again. Like, actually, we're going to get healthier and we're going to win games and our offense is going to be really, really good and our defense is going to be serviceable enough to make it work. They've won four straight games. They are now one game under 500. They are the 8 seed with a little bit of a buffer now. Now, granted, if you want to take a little wind out of the sails, the 4 wins are against Seattle twice, Phoenix, and they just beat the Fever last night. Which can we just, on the Leah Boston front, I'm really going too deep in here, but like, when the fourth quarter comes, can we just get her to basketball, please? Can we just pass Aaliyah Boston to basketball? Like, I don't want to hop on the narrative train. Because, like, there are some contextual things sometimes. It's like, hey, why didn't Aaliyah get the ball? It's like, well, they're putting 2 to the ball and someone's pre-rotating to Aaliyah. The pass isn't available. Like, there are some stuff like that that's happened this season where I'm like, okay, I get it. But also, nah, dog, watch the fourth quarter of Fever League. We got to get Aaliyah the ball a little bit more consistent. But anyway. Those were the 4 wins, so not the elite of the elite in terms of competition, but 4 straight wins nonetheless. Nafisa Collier averaging 28-9 during that stretch, continuing her all-star / all-W campaign. Caleb McBride averaging nearly 17 points during the winning streak, draining nearly 45% of her threes on over 7 attempts during the stretch. And also, I'll continue to shout it, that feed Kayla inverted pick and roll, teams just don't have an answer for it yet. Minnesota's getting good looks just about every time they go to it. That's been fun. Diamond Miller, welcome back, who coincidentally just jump-started the winning streak. She came back into the lineup after that long absence from the ankle. 16-5, 2-2-1 for her, shooting 36% from 3 on moderate volume. They are 4-0 since Diamond Miller's been back.
She came back.
Yes. I love watching Diamond Miller drive the basketball. She's so good at getting downhill. She's so good. The mix of speed, craft, the power, the flexibility. She should not be that good of a driver, like conceptually in year one. Oh my goodness, she's been fun. Also, I've been asking about the point guard room and the guard room in general with Minnesota for most of the year up until this stretch.
Uh-huh.
Lindsey Allen coming back and just reclaiming the starting job and just being solid. That's been enough. 10 points, 7 assists, only 1.5 turnovers during this 4-game winning streak. I will run your offense. I will get my players the ball. And as simplistic and as reductive as that sounds, that has been enough to help Minnesota keep the offense humming. I've enjoyed her play. She's also competed defensively as well. But like, I've enjoyed watching the Lynx during this trip. And again, like, I want to see what this looks like as the schedule bumps up for them a little bit and see what that progress looks like. But when the games are supposed to, and because the middle / lower portion of the W standings have been in flux all year, 4-game winning streak now gets them from like 11th to 8th with room. So hat tip to the Minnesota Lynx. Any closing thoughts and we can get to the draft?
Nope. Time to draft it up.
Let's draft it up indeed. We are going to simulate the WNBA All-Star Draft. And I think the official one is happening on Saturday, if I have that right. And much like last year, I will take the honors of being Team Wilson. Steve will take Team Stewart to represent the Aces and Liberty respectively, and we're going to draft the starters first and then get into the reserves, which I think the reserves are going to get pretty fun. But I'll kick things off since Asia Wilson was the leading vote getter in the W. Makes sense. She would also get the top pick. But anyway, we are going to kick this thing off with Jackie Young.
Jackie Young right off the board.
We'll go Jackie Young right off the
board. Oh.
The blend.
You threw me for a loop. Go ahead.
Oh, no. The blend of shooting, which has been absurd. The shooting, the drives, the pull-up shooting in particular. I want to see the mid-range game perk back up to what we've seen like the last year or two, but still very good. The defense, would like to see it return to levels from last year, but still pretty good. She has been insanely efficient. I've loved the growth from Jackie Young. Seems like an easy first round. First pick, but we're starting with Jackie on the wing. We got to solidify the wing first. Who you got?
Give me Brittany Griner.
Okay. Got to take the size. I respect it. From there, I will take. It gets funky from here. You know what?
We got him, folks.
We got him. I will take. I'll take Jewel Lloyd.
Jewel Lloyd, huh?
Indeed. We'll get the buckets. We'll get the pick and roll pairing going, off ball movement. Let's go, Jewel.
Go ahead and give me Chelsea Gray.
Okay. Chelsea Gray off board. Let me take Chelsea off the board. Let me get NECA.
Oh. Oh.
Was not prepared.
Mm-mm. I was not ready for that. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought you were going in a different direction.
Girl, we did.
Give me Aaliyah Boston.
Okay. Well, in that case, I will take Satu.
And this is where you know your personnel. Almost took Arike last pick, but I knew it was going to happen. I got Arike. Let's go.
We go hoop it up. Oh, Lord. Okay. So, reserve time. Do you want to take first pick of reserve?
Nope, you can have it, man.
Oh, well, excuse me then. Okay. First shot at the reserves. I am going to take Alyssa Thomas. I need the MVP Calvin Flair. I need the best defender on the floor. Could close for her if need be. Another initiator in the half court. Let's have some fun.
Give me Elena Deladon.
That certainly tracks. I figured you would. Elena Deladon off the board. Let me take. Yeah, I can take the bet. Let me get Nafisa Collier.
That's a good pick, man.
Yeah, because I now can get to the guard wing. I know I'm going to guarantee at least one of these. Let me go ahead and get Fee off the board.
Give me Kelsey Plum.
That tracks. And then I will now take Alicia Gray.
Alicia Gray. Not surprised by that, man. Not going to lie to you. Not surprised by that. I have a decision to make, Nikias.
Yeah, you do. You sure do,
I have a decision to make. Sabrina Ionescu.
No, I was like, you know good well. You about to take Sabrina. well, then I will take Kalia Copper.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, we winging it up, buddy. We are going to have some skilled size on the roster.
Give me Courtney Vandersloot.
Okay. Then I will take. Let me get Ezzy real quick.
Ezzy was going to be my next pick, so you really kind of hurt my feelings there. Not going to lie to you.
I wonder who you're going to pick between DeJuana Bonner and Cheyenne Parker.
Give me DeJuana Bonner.
I, for one, am shocked. And I will close this out with Cheyenne Parker. Oh, so we are going to, we got to find a day for this, but we're going to simulate this on 2K. Ahead of the All-Star game, for sure. All-Star game is next Saturday?
Yes.
July 15th? So maybe we aim for like an early Friday type beat, or maybe a Thursday. We'll see what the rest of the schedule looks like.
Could be the vibes.
Could be indeed. So come rock with the Dunker Spot watch party. You can rock with us and we can yell about 2K and how the AIs operate. Especially on the W side. This will be our first W sim. We've done a few NBA sims, and they have been wild. A couple of those are on YouTube. But we'll see what happens on the W front. Steve, do you have free throws? Close us out.
I sure do. Would you like me to go first, or would you like to go first?
Actually, let me go first. I have a shorter list, I would imagine.
Okay.
Okay. So, more available, Damian Lillard or Keke Palmer?
That is a start. Damian Lillard, because he requested a trade. And we know about it. Oh. Moving right along.
All right. Where is Pascal Siakam playing next year?
Toronto.
Okay. Will he be a member of that team, or will that be a road game?
Nah, he's going to be a Raptor.
Okay. Aside from the lottery guys, who are you most excited to watch in Vegas?
Who am I most excited to watch in Vegas?
Indeed.
Does that have to be a rookie? Or just like in general?
Yeah, just a general.
That threw me for a loop, buddy. I'm not going to lie to you.
We will circle back.
Yeah, bring that back for me.
Got you. Who's your current sixth player of the year in the W?
Oh, you really came with some heat. Like, you really want me to think. Like, this is what you want me to do? It's a whole Thursday, Friday pun. That's it. Hey, man, put your thinking cap on. Shoot, I'm going to go Elyse Clark.
Okay. Who do you trust more right now, the Chicago Sky or the Dallas Wings?
The answer is no. No. This is the W version of you asking me, do you trust the Wizards or the Wolves? No. I believed in both of you, and you burned me. Both of you did.
Tough.
No, I can see the vision. I'll probably say the Wings right now.
Okay. Last question I have for you. Who's been better, Jackie Young or last year's Kelsey Plum?
This year's Jackie Young.
Okay.
All due respect to Kelsey Plum. The hashtag was MV Plum. Jackie Young has been on a different level. Now, what was the question that you had that I Euro set pass? Who's the most player I wanted to?
Yeah, aside from the lottery players, who are you most excited to watch in Las Vegas for Summer League?
Man, come on, see Chris Murray.
Okay.
Get him Whitmore. That time, Bob.
Okay. Gotcha.
Is it my turn?
Yes, it is.
What color chip is Tyler Hero?
Huh?
He's not a
blue chip. Oh, he's not a blue chip. Oh, God. There is not a color I could use. He's not blue. Green chip?
Okay. Do you believe it was an episode of DuckTales that made Brooke Lopez change his mind on going full Scrooge McDuck?
That would not surprise me at all.
Does Josh Richardson's return to Miami prove that heat culture is a pyramid scheme?
Wait a minute. Out of the way. What in the FTX is this? Hey.
It's not, by the way. It's just fun to return. I wanted to get Nikias' reaction.
Oh, man. I didn't like it. Looks...
Golden State adding Chris Paul and Corey Joseph. Absolutely tired of the Steph Curry off-court numbers, right?
Yes.
Okay. Lonnie Walker IV or Dennis Smith Jr., which one are you more excited for the Nets?
Dennis Smith Jr. Give me that point of attack defense, dog.
Are you enjoying the summer of Jokic?
Not more than Jokic is enjoying the summer of Jokic.
Is the Big Three ready for Tony Allen to play defense?
No.
Is Tony Allen ready to play defense in the Big Three?
Probably not, but I didn't say
that. Yes, he is. That wasn't me. What you mean? Anthony Edwards did sign his max extension, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
He was once compared to Kobe White, J.R. Smith, Colin Sexton, Dion Waiters, and Jordan Crawford. Thoughts?
Oh, boy. That is a list of names. He has proven to be better than all of them. Salute to Anthony Edwards. All getting the money. I hope he continues to grow as a player and person.
Who has a stronger belief? A summer league point guard in their pull-up or the Raptors and Wings?
God. Yes. Absolutely. Probably the Raptors.
Okay. Are Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma teaming up in Washington the plot for a wacky TV sitcom?
But they are just going to run the League Fits account?
Yep.
Nah, it's going to be a funny bit when Jordan just sits in the section instead of the bench when he gets subbed up.
I got you. Would you rather hear about Kendrick Nunn's defense or that you look like him?
Oh, God. The defense, probably. I don't...
Okay. A better t-shirt, It Is What It Is, or DNPCD?
Oh, I need the context on this one.
One I can give you. Daryl Morey had the first one. The second one, I'm not touching.
Okay. God. We'll go with the latter then for the LOLs.
All right. I'll fill you in after the pod.
Okay.
Take us home.
I am now alarmed, but thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. We have some fun discussions in there and also just getting awesome takes that we can on the timeline or don't want to deal with responses on the timeline. So have some fun in there. Join us for the online Dunker Spot watch parties. We are watching NBA Summer League basketball. We're watching W basketball. We watch some wrestling. We have now dabbled into reality television after wrestling. We will leave it there. We're watching a little bit of everything. 2K Sims are coming. Come rock with us. The link is going to be in the description. Click on it. It should be hyperlinked. Enter your information. No shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Sign up for us. Again, no shenanigans. We have lots and lots and lots of fun in there. So come rock with us. And for that, we will catch y'all next week for some early Vegas Summer League takes.
That man went from being in his feelings to singing in my feelings.